Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, it's gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning, Mindy.
Okay, we've talked about dry before, but oh my goodness, drier than dry.
I have crispy critters in my yard.
I think we all do. I was so jealous. Last week, I picked up my grandson at the bus stop from camp, and his pants were soaked. I said, what did you do, jump in the lake? He said, no, it was pouring rain. I was like, why can't it do that here?
My goodness. Yes, I spoke with a friend who lives in West Barnstable, and last week there was literally a cloudburst over 6A in West Barnstable, and she got rain.
And I think that's it. Nobody else got any. Yeah, so you really want to check with your town for the water restrictions, because they kind of keep changing. We had a little bit of rain a while ago. We thought we were kind of maybe moving in the other direction, but I don't know. Maybe we'll get some rain.
Yeah, I think if you look at the, it seems to me we haven't had a good soaking rain since June.
I know.
We did have, I remember one storm in July where we got a half an inch in my rain gauge, and I'm going, woohoo!
We would love a half an inch right now.
Yeah, nothing since then. Most of the Cape is under some form of water restrictions. I'm trying as best I can to comply with most of them. I do water. I get up really early in the morning, and I'm watering well before the sun comes up, pretty much. So 6 o'clock, I'm out there moving sprinklers around, and I don't water again in the evening until it's like pretty late, 7 or 8 o'clock at night, which is not the best. I mean, watering so the plants stay wet overnight is really not fabulous for fungal diseases, but my plants need water. I have a hard time watering by hand because I have extensive beds. I'm not watering my lawn, and it certainly reflects it.
Mine too. It's like crunch, crunch when you walk across it.
And I'm watering the vegetable garden, and I'm watering containers by hand with I have a 2-gallon watering can. But I can't, I'm barely keeping up, and my yard is hardly a showpiece at this moment.
Oh, no kidding. Mine, I feel the same way. And I'm same thing. I've been watering my containers, and I have been hand watering my dahlias just because they're what's in bloom right now. And I kind of go over some of this. It's even, you know, the things that are supposedly drought tolerant are looking a little thirsty. Everybody's looking a little thirsty.
Everything's looking thirsty. I see plants that are on the perimeter of my yard that are out of the range of my when I set up my sprinklers. There are actually a couple of hydrangeas out there, the smooth hydrangea, hydrangea arborescens, and the leaves are just sort of hanging down. The problem is that we often do not actually see the worst of the damage from weather like this until the following years. So I think we're going to see a lot of damage next year.
That is what I'm worried about. I was looking at my limelight hydrangea, which is really the star right now because it's so, you know, big and beautiful and a lot of brown leaves. And I have been hand watering that, which I know probably isn't enough. And I was thinking that same thing. I'm like, what is this going to mean for the next season?
Yeah. What we will see on a number of plants is you might see on woody plants, shrubs and small trees, you will see some dieback on branches, on twigs. I know this year I had a beautiful full moon maple off on the perimeter of the yard in an area that never got any irrigation last year. And of course, we experienced this last year as well. This year, there are some major branches in that tree that are just dead. And I'm suspecting I'm going to have an arborist over here at some point and take it down. We will also see fewer blooms on things like rhododendrons, perhaps. They're setting their flower buds in August and September, and they require a fair amount of steady moisture for that. So we obviously am not having steady moisture, so we may see fewer flower buds on rhododendrons and azaleas. It's the dieback that concerns me more. We'll see perennials come up, maybe be smaller, not as vigorous. because the roots have been damaged by extremely dry soil.
Yeah, and the rhododendrons are sort of shallow rooted, so you know
they are.
So the deeper rooted things, like some of the big trees and things, we don't really need to worry about, right?
They will survive. And anything that you planted this year is truly at risk.
Oh my goodness! I know. I planted four of the incredible hydrangeas, but I've been watering them every single day.
Yes, and they require that pretty much in order to get through this.
Yeah, and I will water them every single day for as long as I can, just to make sure, because I don't want to lose them.
We really need a very critical part of plants getting through the winter is having adequate hydration in the fall. And last year it was dry up until sometime in October, and then we had lots of rain. Mm-hmm. So late October, November, December, we had lots of rain, and the plants were hydrated and made it through the cold part of the winter in fairly decent shape. So I have to hope that that happens again this year.
Yeah, I planted a Redbud, the flamethrower, last year, and I guess I didn't water it enough in the fall. I stopped and it didn't make it. So I learned my lesson there.
I always urge people to keep watering should we be able to, right, up until the ground freezes.
Yeah.
If we're not having rain. You know, I was hoping, not that I wanted a hurricane. I never want a hurricane.
We want some of the rain from it, though.
I was hoping that it would come close enough that the rain shield
would
come to the Cape, but it doesn't look like it.
Yeah, we'll get the wind and surf. So this is something to think about too. For, you know, this is a time of year a lot of people think about, you know, dividing their hostas, the daylilies, the iris, and replanting. My husband said, "Hey, let's move that this bush that we have that forgetting the name of at the moment." And I'm like, I don't want to stress this out any more than it is. So we want to wait a little bit maybe to start doing that. I mean, the hosta might be okay, but anything that, you know, has been stressed by this dryness, we probably don't want to be moving right now.
We generally want to do that sort of a task, moving, dividing, replanting, with a well-hydrated plant, which is not now.
Right.
And even though temperatures have moderated at the moment, my heat actually came on this morning.
Oh,
no. I jumped out of bed and came downstairs and turned off the furnace.
Oh,
it was crazy. You want to wait maybe sometime in September, which coincidentally is only a couple of weeks away.
I know.
And hopefully we've had some good rains by then so that they have sort of rehydrated themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't want to transplant something that's already stressed.
Yeah, yeah. And it feels like fall weather. It's hard to, you know, you never know, I guess, what you're going to have in the middle of August, but it probably will get hot again after this week, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I am enjoying this.
I love this weather.
I buy a cord of wood every year. I buy it green because I buy a year in advance, and it sits in my driveway until the weather moderates enough for me to stack it. So I've been stacking for 2 days now. One more day, I should get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's perfect weather for stacking wood.
Yeah, I have been surprised. We have all the perennial and vegetable beds in the backyard, but in the front yard, we have this little section that has not been watered, and I'm like, how are these weeds making it? It's like they're thriving.
I am always amazed.
I know.
Yes. You know, weeds are the tough critters of the garden, and they seem to be able to get whatever moisture there is to the detriment of a decent plant next to them. But yes, weeds are thriving. Crabgrass, if I didn't have crabgrass in my lawn, it wouldn't be green at all.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. The other thing I was thinking, I noticed that a lot of folks with their bearded iris, they cut the leaves back. I have never done that. I might cut the, you know, something turns brown. But what's your thoughts on that? Do you cut your bearded iris leaves or do you leave them?
I leave them. I'm not sure where that practice came in. There may be a reason for it that I'm not aware of. When there is a particular leaf spot fungus that affects bearded iris, it requires wet days, wet mm-hmm. weather to do that, so I really haven't seen a lot of it. And years when there has been this leaf spot on iris, I have cut my leaves back. But at this point, I'm not sure. I might cut them back before we go into the winter when I'm doing general cleaning up in my garden, which actually I'm going to start pretty soon. But I do not cut my iris back. I do cut off the spent flower stalks. Mm-hmm. I don't leave those on mm-hmm. the plant, but I leave the foliage because that's what's photosynthesizing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's what's sending yeah. nutrients to the roots. So I like to leave them unless they look like crap.
Yeah, cut off the dead stuff. You know, going back to, I mentioned watering my dahlias, I have, you know, hand watered them while I'm doing the containers, but I actually have some that still have not really grown that much, have not bloomed. Some have and some haven't. And I'm wondering if it is just the quality of the bulbs that I got, or if it's, you know, just because it seems like this has been an odd season. A lot of things have not grown as they usually do.
I have heard people say that. I have a dahlia. I finally restrained myself and said I'm not growing dahlias anymore, except the one I have in a container that I've had for a number of years. And it's a small, it's not a big dinner plate, it's a small dwarf dahlia. Very beautiful, deep purple foliage and purple flowers. And every year it looks gorgeous. This year the foliage is fabulous. I haven't had any blooms on it.
Yeah, so it's not just my yard then.
No, it's not. And I haven't treated it any different than I do in previous years. So I don't know why it's not blooming this year, but it's not blooming.
Yeah, I've never had this happen before. I've always had, you know, really good, it's one of the reasons I like the dahlias, because as we get into the middle of August where there's not a lot blooming, they sort of take over the show.
Yes.
But yeah, not so much this year. It's perplexing for sure. One thing that is doing really well, and I had no idea how great this shrub would be, is the Vitex chess tree.
Oh, yes.
What a fabulous plant that is.
Yes, as I sit here talking to you, I'm looking out the window at my Vitex, which is a beautiful blue bloom and has been for several weeks now. We're very fortunate on the Cape that we can grow it because it's not an extraordinarily hardy plant. We're sort of at the very northern edge of its hardiness, and I think that's because we're influenced by our maritime environment. But that color blue is spectacular, and it's one of the joys of my August garden.
Yeah, and the pollinators love it.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and how I just put mine in a couple years ago, and it's really started. What do they get, about 12 feet tall?
They can get quite large. I have cut mine back because it was getting, as usual, I planted it a little too close to the house. And so I can, you're not supposed to control size by pruning, but I don't always follow the rules. So I do some pruning on it on an annual basis. And it since it blooms on new wood, that forces out new wood that then will bloom in the summer. But yes, it gets 10 to 12 feet. Not sometimes we forget plants grow wide as well as tall. It probably will get 10 feet wide too.
Mm. Actually, mine's in a perfect spot then. I put it next to my shed, a little bit farther away from it, just kind of to block an addition of the house next to me. And it's growing up right into the spot I hoped it would. So,
oh, perfect.
So it's got plenty of room. Yeah. We're looking for your gardening questions this morning. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Love to hear what's growing well in your garden as well. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. It's Gardening This Morning with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. If you have a question or some advice you'd like to share, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. I was so disappointed. My tomatoes were doing great. I think I maybe got 4 or 5 off of them. We went on vacation for a week. The dog was gone for a week. And the rats decided, oh, this is our chance. I came back from vacation and they got every single tomato on my tomato plants.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
There's something in my yard that is eating my tomatoes. Judging by the size of the bites and the placement of the bites on the tomatoes, I'm thinking it could be a rat, it could be a raccoon. It's bigger than a chipmunk, whatever it is, because I have, I'll be finding tomatoes literally half eaten, several feet yards away from the vegetable garden. So they're being carried and taken away from the garden to be consumed. I reached the point several weeks ago. My cherries started ripening in early July, and then maybe towards the end of July, my slicers started ripening, and I was thrilled to see them. I had my first BLT of the season and was all excited, and that's when I started finding the eaten tomatoes. So now, at the first blush of color, I pick them.
Yeah, mine don't even get to that point, yeah.
Well, it's very funny because once they start turning color, you can pick them, put them, bring them indoors, put them on the shelf, and their flavor as they continue to ripen on your shelf is just as good as if you had them on the vine.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
I don't hesitate when I go out there every day when I see them turning color, I just pick them. And that's the only way I've gotten tomatoes, because if I don't pick them, if I wait even a day, they're
eaten.
Get them.
And what's funny, I got home and I looked, and the same thing, they were about turning color. There were a couple that were turned in, they're like almost mostly eaten, still hanging there. And I thought, okay, those are too high for chipmunks, and that's a lot to be eaten. So I pulled off all the ones that had some bite marks or, had been half eaten. And they, left the ones that weren't. The next day I came out, they got into the green ones and I saw the rat droppings. So I'm like, yep, it's definitely rats. But then I just pulled the tomato plants out. I'm like, yeah, I'm clearly not going to get any tomatoes. So then my summer squash was attacked next. And my husband said, you should have left those tomatoes up there. They would have gone for those and left the squash alone.
Yeah, I had so much summer squash. I'm actually glad mine is finally going by. There's only so much I can eat, so much I can freeze, so much I can give away before my friends start turning away from me when they see me coming. So if they want to eat that, I don't care. But they started in on my cucumbers after my tomatoes, and I do mind that.
Yes. I got my cucumbers. I pulled my last one off. I mean, now my cucumber plant's, again, I don't know if it's the heat or whatever, but it hasn't been doing all that well. So I've gotten my last cucumber as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the garden, and I've got some areas where if I pull out, the Magda zucchini that's gone by, the Costa Luca Romanesco that's gone by, I will rework that soil. I could get in a quick crop, of something for my fall garden.
Yeah.
I'm not looking on it as a loss. It's an opportunity to plant something new. And since I'm sick of zucchini,
it's
a good idea.
Yeah. One of my coworkers was telling me that the crows have been bothering her neighbor's tomatoes. And I guess I would think, a lot of the critters are thirsty, right, with this lack of rain and water. And they had read that if you get one of these fake dead crows and put it in the garden, the crows will leave it alone. And she said they did, and it works. Had you ever heard that?
I never heard that either. It sounds reasonable, but it's very strange. I don't have a real problem with crows per se. Catbirds are the ones that they particularly like my cherry tomatoes. And I make it a point. I have 3 different sources of water in the area that they have access to. 2 bird baths and a little concrete thing that sits on the ground that I keep filled with water for the critters. I always said it was they were searching for water, but I'm curious because there is water available. I think they like the tomatoes.
It's like sweet water, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's been interesting to, you know, as many know, I took down my bird feeders maybe 6-7 years ago because of the rats. I have very little food source, so I'm not sure why they like my yard so much, but I think they're just happen to be everywhere. But same thing with the bird baths is I get a lot of bird watching and just watching my two bird baths. It's amazing the different birds that will visit your bird bath.
Yeah, yeah. I think rats are, frankly, a part of our environment, just like chipmunks, just like field mice, just like shrews and voles. They are one of the little mammals that live as a natural critter in our environment. We tend to find them concentrated more in areas where perhaps families have chickens, or it's a more slightly urban area, and there's trash around, or if someone's a great bird feeder, because then you're just giving them a banquet.
Yeah.
But even if you're not doing that, there are still going to be rats around. I'm pretty sure I have a rat in my yard, but I do have neighbors with chickens. Mm-hmm. But I stopped feeding the birds. And outside of my vegetable garden, there really isn't anything out there that I am giving them that would attract them. But they're still there anyway. So they're just a natural part of our environment.
Yeah, and if you have one, you have more. It's never just one. They're so smart. That's the thing. They are incredibly smart. And, you know, it's hard to trick them, right? So, I mean, I think my best defense is the dog chasing them. But that's still, you know, the dog's not out there 24 hours a day, so they come in. But we'll have to figure out how to outsmart those critters. But I used to have them on one side of the yard with where the neighbor does feed the birds, and they seem to be there. And so I took my strawberry garden out because they would get all the strawberries, and I planted zinnias in there this year, and the zinnias look fabulous. But
zinnias are a wonderful crop. I plant them every year. This year I planted a whole bed, since I didn't do dahlias. I turned that bed into a zinnia bed, and I like to grow Bennery Giants. I get the Bennery Giant mix. They're sold at garden centers in six packs, and they are just magnificent cut flowers.
Yeah.
They're just beautiful color in the yard. Birds enjoy them to pick seeds out of them as they go by. Pollinators love them, and hummingbirds like them. Mm. So for me, they're a win-win flower in my garden.
Yeah, I'm going to plant more next year.
All right. They're definitely worth it.
Oh, for sure. And surprisingly, the garden bed is completely full, and I threw seeds in there. So I'm very happy with how it turned out. All right, Jane in Mashpee says, I have a large number of areas in the garden that have new large mounds of sand. I assume it is chipmunks. Does that make sense? How do I get rid of them? A neighbor suggested mothballs, but I'm not a fan of that.
It's hard to say if it's chipmunks or not. Large mound of sands could describe a number of different things. Unfortunately, as I said about the rats, they're part of our natural environment, and I do not recommend putting mothballs out in your garden. It's basically a pollutant, and also the material on a mothball is vaporizes, so it's only effective in confined areas and dissipates rather rapidly outdoors. So there's not much you can do about chipmunks. They're just here.
Yeah. And don't use mothballs. The other thing too, we have to think about everything we put on the ground, right? Can get into our water supply. So we want to be careful about that for sure. I had two interesting, I always like to throw a little something seed wise in my containers and see what happens. And I got these seeds. I think they were labeled chrysanthemums, and they were supposed to be red flowers with a yellow center.
Oh, pretty.
Turns out they are sort of orange and sort of a burnt orange together with a black center, and I actually think they're prettier than what was supposed to be there. But it's funny how they came up in a couple containers and not the others. And then in all of the containers I planted, just put freesia bulbs in there. I have one freesia in the window box of the shed. You just never know.
freesias are lovely, lovely plants. I have not never had any luck with them. They are so fragrant. I just want to have them, but I gave up trying to grow them a year ago, you know, several years ago.
Yeah, and I have different results. I do them every year, and some years I get some, and some, and I only do it in the containers because they never come up in the yard. But that is my absolute favorite flower scent, is freesia.
Oh, it is wonderful, isn't it?
It's like now I have to walk by the window box and just keep smelling that one little flower. Yeah. It's like I wish I could get more. And I wondered, what is your favorite flower scent, Roberta?
Well, right now it's our native clethra, summer sweet or sweet pepper bush. It grows along the edges of the woods and edges of the wetlands here on the Cape. It's native pretty much throughout New England. Starts blooming in August, and it just has the most amazing fragrance to it. There are also pink varieties, pink spires and ruby red, I think, is the name of another one. Just a very deep, fragrant odor that to me evokes memories of going to my grandfather's in South Dartmouth as a child, and he lived near a marsh and there were lots of clethra growing there, and it's my favorite scent of the summer. So that's what I like. I have several in my yard and I can't wait till they start blooming. And it's funny, if I'm out walking somewhere and all of a sudden you can just get this wave of fragrance, and I go, oh, there must be clethra planted nearby. Yeah. They're just lovely.
It's so funny how the different seasons, like in the spring, don't you just love the smell of the dirt?
I love the smell
You're like,
of
oh, dirt.
and I can't think of the word. It's a petrichor or something like that. It's the scent after a early spring rain. And yes, I there are different smells that we associate with different times of the year. It's like when you ask me what my favorite flower might be. Well, what's blooming
right
now? And it's similar with different fragrances, but certainly clethra stands out for me. Right. I just love it.
Yeah. I wanted to mention, you know, as we know, C.L. Frenari does the Saturday Garden Lady show. And
yes,
this week she talked about marigolds. And I was so glad she did, because I'm also a huge fan of marigolds. And in this crazy dry summer we have, the one thing that is doing great are my marigolds. And at my window box, I mentioned, has marigolds in it. And when I came back from vacation, my friend who was watering did not water the window box. So there are my sort of dead looking marigolds. I went, oh, well, and they bounced back. I couldn't believe they look beautiful again. And I have another container that I literally just put a 6-pack of marigolds in, and it is overflowing with these beautiful yellow marigolds. And I said, you know what? I think I'm going to do all of my containers in marigolds next year.
I love marigolds. Again, it's marigolds, zinnias. To me, they're old-fashioned flowers of summer. I always like them. My mom planted them. My grandmother planted them. And marigolds in particular, a lot of people do not like the fragrance of the marigold leaves. I love it. I think they're wonderful. And the color of the petals are just incredible. So many different oranges and yellows and reds. They're really beautiful. I grow in a couple of containers I have. There's one called Little Gem, and it has very finely cut leaves, and it's just covered with bright yellow flowers. I have a Tangerine Gem that is more orange. There's another one called Burnt Embers that has a deep rusty red flower. And I think one of my favorites of the standard French marigolds is, it's called Sophie, something like that. I have a cat named Sophie, so I like that.
Yeah, I know there's so many different varieties. And one of the things people always think, they put them in their vegetable garden because they think they, you know, keep away the bad bugs, which is a myth, right? But they do attract good bugs.
They do attract pollinators. The petals can be used in salads. It's considered an edible flower. They're such cheerful cheerful flowers. I encourage people to grow them anywhere in their gardens.
Right. It's like the spring flower for me is violas and pansies. And I think,
yes.
Yeah, marigolds, you have to have some marigolds. And I think
yeah.
next year
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
going. And it's so hard to find things in six packs anymore, but you can always find marigolds.
You can pretty much find marigolds. Many of the garden centers are now bringing in, not six packs, but they're bringing in their fall foliage and floral selections, usually in 4 or 6 inch pots. And there are marigolds available now for fall planting. They have the flowering kale that are quite small right now, but if you plant them now and you can keep them watered, they'll be absolutely gorgeous in your window boxes or in your gardens for the fall display. So it's a great time, actually, to go to one of your favorite local garden centers and see what they have and freshen up some of your containers that maybe are looking a little tired of summer.
Yeah. Chris writes, any advice on dealing with a mole or vole in the yard? I have lots of new perennials and shrubs planted this year and last, and the critter has burrowed tunnels near the roots. Should I be worried about the root systems?
What I find does that are voles. Also, shrews will tunnel. I haven't seen a lot of moles on Cape Cod. I'm sure we have them. If they're right in and amongst the root systems, yes, they can cause some disturbance by, you know, damaging roots, and also the tunneling creates air pockets where roots can dry out. Again, like chipmunks, there's not a lot you can do about them. If they're in your vegetable garden, you should use some sort of repellent around the vegetable garden to discourage them, but out in the areas of your regular gardens, there's not a lot you can do. Pray for predators.
Exactly. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We're talking with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark, and we'll have more after break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Eleanor writes, she installed a brick path. She says, the lovely winding path from cars to the back porch was installed in June. Then came silence as we waited to see miraculous foliage crop up, resulting by mid-August in charming clusters of stone dust, bone-dry dirt balls, and slivers of crabgrass. On the upside, there's not a tick in sight.
You know, the best laid plans often run into nature and reality. I'm not sure what her question is, but my heart, you know, feels for her on this one.
Yeah.
A lot of work and not necessarily the results you had desired.
Yeah, pros and cons to everything, right?
There are. There have been ticks this year, although this dry weather actually discourages them. They tend to dehydrate to a certain extent when it's this dry. August, traditionally, we don't see a lot of the adult or nymphs. They're in what we call diapause. It's sort of the summer equivalent of hibernation, dormancy. The larval ticks hatch in August. They're little teeny, teeny, tiny, very teeny. People rarely see a larval tick. And this is where they seek their very first host. When they hatch, they do not carry any of the particular diseases that we associate with them. They find their first host, be it a mouse or a deer or what have you, and if that host is infected, that's where they pick up the various viruses.
And this is the black-legged tick you're talking about, right?
Black-legged tick or deer tick, correct.
And what about the Lone Star tick? Does the heat have the same kind of impact with them as well? Is it for all ticks or just the black-legged tick?
That I can't answer with any degree of certainty.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I would have to defer to if Larry Dapsis is out there. I know mm-hmm. he's retired from the Extension Service, but he's the go-to tick guy.
Yeah.
I would defer to him on that particular one. I still urge people to be, you know, cautious when they're out working in the yard. I'm working around my wood pile because I'm stacking wood, and it's in a wooded area, and there's leaf litter and all that sort of stuff. And even though it's August, I still want to take precautions, so I am spraying my shoes and mm-hmm. socks. And yesterday I had on long pants, and I sprayed the bottom from the knee down with deep wood off. You know, a little bit of precaution doesn't hurt anything. I know the adult ticks are not active right now, but I don't want to, you know, there's mm-hmm. always the possibility that one might be, you know.
Yeah, you don't know,
100%.
Right. And permethrin also, that kills them. They get on your shoes.
Permethrin kills them. You don't want to put permethrin on your skin.
Right.
You only want to put permethrin on clothing, and it will last through several washes. So it's a great material to use, but not on your skin.
Yeah.
The deep wood off has DEET in it, and I don't like to put it on my skin, but it's permitted to be used in that fashion. I generally just put that on my clothing.
Right. All right, and Dan wants to know about some fungus that he's seeing on his tomato plants. He's yellowing leaves. It sounds a little bit like blight. He said they've pulled up some of the tomatoes that have that, but he's worried about next year and wonders what he can do to prevent it.
There are a couple of wilt diseases, fusarium wilt and verticillium wilt, that are soil-borne. They live in the soil. You can't get rid of it from the soil. I have verticillium, excuse me, in my soil, and one of my beds I know has it because I've planted things that get verticillium and don't thrive and then succumb. One diagnostic tool is if you slice diagonally on a stem, obviously you're not going to continue growing that plant, and the vascular tissue inside the stem is discolored. That's very indicative of verticillium or fusarium. In the bed where I know I have it, I try to only plant disease-resistant varieties, because for the wilt diseases, there are no sprays that you can use. Mm-hmm. You have to put a resistant variety. And in the bed, I did put one variety that is not resistant, and that is yellowing and declining, mm-hmm. and I'm pretty sure it has verticillium. Right next to it is Park's Whopper Improved, and it is dark green. It is loaded with big, beautiful tomatoes, as long as whatever the critter is doesn't get to them. And so it's a real visual reminder to me that if I want to grow tomatoes in that bed, they have to be resistant varieties.
Yeah. Does the verticillium last forever, or if you were to rotate the crops and do them somewhere else, can you come back to it in a couple of years, or is it there forever?
It's pretty much there forever. Mm. You can rotate your crops. That certainly, I do recommend that more for the foliar diseases. But if you want to grow tomatoes in that area again, make sure it's a Better Boy, a Celebrity Plus, a Parks Whopper Plus, or if you read labels on when you buy a tomato, or if you, you know, in the middle of winter are perusing the seed catalogs, look for varieties that have a V or an F labeled on them. That stands for the verticillium and the fusarium, and it means that they are resistant to those particular diseases.
God, that's good advice. You talked at the beginning of the gardening season, we were talking about basil, and you mentioned, was it Rutgers? Was that the variety?
Rutgers.
Yeah.
There are three different varieties with the Rutgers name on them. I grow Rutgers Obsession because I can get it in six packs at Jenny's Edibles and Blooms. And it is an absolutely wonderful basil. Right now in my garden, it's about 18 to 20 inches tall. Mm-hmm. It's full. I keep picking off the flowers, and so it keeps putting out new growth. It has absolutely beautiful green leaves, no yellowing, no disease, nothing. So I have a lot of friends who don't grow it, and they grow regular basil, and it's pretty much going by now because it's gotten the downy mildew. So that's another clear case of, you know, grow something that's resistant and it doesn't get the disease.
Right. And, you know, it's funny, I got some because you mentioned it. I'm not sure which Rutgers I have, but I have three different types of basil, and all three of mine are doing fabulous.
I'm glad to hear that.
Surprisingly fabulous.
Yeah. There's another one that's sold with some regularity, comes in six packs at garden centers, and it's Prospera Compact. That is also downy mildew resistant. It's a good one.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about some of your favorite drought-tolerant plants, because, you know, we had this last summer, and it might be a good idea as you're looking at some of those more tender things that are succumbing to this heat to replace them with some drought-tolerant things.
Well, as I look out into my yard, I have to tell you, I've always loved hostas, and I still really love hostas, and they are amazingly drought tolerant. I have one hosta that's out, unfortunately, and I had to prune one of my trees, and so it's now experiencing a little more sun than it might like. It's big, it's beautiful, it's not crispy, it's not wilted. I have another bed that is filled with hostas, and some of them are getting a little crispy around the edge, maybe a little bit of yellowing, but they're not wilting. Also in the perennial garden, Baptisia, which is another native to the Midwest plant, is about 3.5 feet tall, beautiful blue-gray foliage. When it's in bloom earlier in the year, it's just a magnificent plant, very deep, deep-rooted plant, and is amazingly drought-tolerant. So those are a couple that just spring to mind looking out my window.
Echinacea does pretty good, right?
Echinacea does pretty good. Eventually it will wilt, but I have it growing in an area that I'm not irrigating, and it's doing very well. Another one for dry shade is Epimidium. Rock-solid plant, does incredibly well in dry weather.
You mentioned the hostas, and it's interesting. Some of the hostas are a little more tolerant than others. It's funny. I had some planted under a tree that I took down. So there are a couple there that are just like, you know, burnt up from the sun, and others that are still green and look fine. It's a different variety of hosta, and I'm not really sure which variety it is. But it's interesting how some of them will tolerate much more sun than others.
I find the ones that have white variegation tend to burn more easily than either the solid green or the ones with gold variegation. I'm not sure why that's the case, but that's what I'm seeing, at least in my own yard. Daylilies are very drought tolerant. They're not looking their best right now, but they're past their season of bloom. Their old foliage is starting to die. If you go out and clean them up, you'll see all new green foliage coming, and they'll be lovely, not in bloom, but lovely foliage within another week or two.
Yeah, it's interesting because my daylilies, I have moved some around and, you know, kind of put the ones I like, and there was this one I have that I'm not crazy about the color. And earlier in the season, when the other ones were blooming and this one was not, I'm like, I bet it's that color I don't like. So I dug them up and I stuck them in a pail that with water in the bottom, and my sister-in-law took some, and I was going to get rid of them, and all of a sudden when they bloomed, I was like, wait a minute, that's a color I like. But because it's still sitting in that water, I'm going to let them thrive there for the time being. They are still blooming when all of my other daylilies are done.
Wow. Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, and they're beautiful. They're sort of an orange and yellow stripe pattern. They're so pretty. So
I have one similar to that. Yeah. It's very nice.
I love the bright orange ones.
Yeah. I like bright colors in my garden anyway.
Yeah, me too. All right, Eleanor wrote back, the one with the brick path. She says, what would one plant on either side of a charming brick path was my deeply buried previous question.
Good question. If you just want something low growing and low maintenance, you could go with any number of plants. There used to be a line of plants that were sold at garden centers called steppables. I don't know if they're still sold under that particular name, but all sorts of like Irish moss, Scotch moss, the various creeping thyme.
I was going to say creeping thyme, yeah.
Yeah, 5 or 6 different creeping thymes, some with red flowers, some with white flowers, some with pink flowers. Woolly thyme has a gray-green fuzzy little leaf. And they're great low-growing plants that will creep in between the stones up along the side of the bed as they flower. They do attract pollinators, so if you're allergic to bees, that might not be your best choice. But bees, the thing about bees don't attack you, you know, unless you're actually physically harassing a bee. They won't bother you at all. You can work very easily amongst bees. Yeah. Yellow jackets are a different story, but then yellow jackets don't necessarily come to these types of plants at this time of year.
And that creeping thyme is really so pretty. It's lovely. I had a brick path at a house I used to have, and it was more shaded. The front yard was shaded. So I planted impatiens down both sides, and it was absolutely stunning. But if one gets stepped on or whatever, it kind of ruins the whole look if one of them happens to die.
That's why I like these little creeping plants like the thymes, because if you step on them, they don't care.
They don't care, right.
You know, they'll just come right back. And you don't have to do anything to them.
Yeah, and they come back year after year looking better and better. My neighbor has a whole bunch of creeping thyme, and it just looks lovely. I haven't had much luck with it in my yard, but in her yard it looks great.
Once they're established, they don't mind the drought. You don't have to fertilize them. You certainly don't have to prune them. They're great little plants.
Yeah, that's great. All right, so September, a couple weeks away, and our thoughts are kind of turning a little bit to clean up. I know it's always this question of what do you clean up in the fall and what do you wait for the spring? And you mentioned you're going to be starting cleanup. What are you going to be cleaning up?
Well, as I look into my front yard, there's an area that gets full sun and was a little bit out of the range of the sprinkler, and I have a stilbe there, and it is crispy and really is not attractive. So right now, what I'm looking at is what just doesn't look good. What do I not want to look at? And that's what I'm going to start cleaning up and cutting back, and literally cutting right back to the ground.
Yeah, same thing. I'm kind of reassessing. Every year I kind of go through the summer as the season progressed. I've gone through and taking little videos or photos to remind myself of what's growing where, because I have this habit of, oh, there's a space, I think, right? And then I have things too close together and gets a little more like a chaos garden. So I've pretty much got things where I want them, except for one sort of long perennial bed that I really didn't get to at all. This year, I didn't transplant, move the things I wanted to. So I'm really got my fingers crossed that we get some rain that I might be able to move some of those things. Otherwise, I'm going to have to wait till spring.
They're talking about showers tomorrow.
Yeah, but one day isn't going to help us, right?
No,
we need
not.
A little more. And I mean, and that's the other thing, too. We might get a little bit of rain, and then and it's surprising. You'll get a rainstorm, and you think, wow, we got a lot of rain. And then you go out and look at the rain gauge, and you're like, what? Quarter of an inch, really?
Yeah, we got nothing. What we need is like a day long, gentle, soaking rain for, you know, 24 hours. And that won't make a dent in the drought, but at least it would revive some of these plants.
Yeah. Yeah. So just about a minute left. Final thoughts on what we might, if folks want to think about throwing anything in the vegetable garden now, is it too early to start some of our fall things like spinach and things like that?
Oh, absolutely not. This is an excellent time to plant spinach. In fact, it's the best time of the year to plant spinach. Keep it moist. Mm-hmm. It will come up fairly quickly, and you can be harvesting spinach in, 4 weeks. Mm. And if you don't harvest all of them, and if particularly if you grow a variety called Bloomsdale Long Standing, it will survive the winter beautifully, and you'll be picking spinach off those same plants sometime in April. So definitely plant some spinach, plant some lettuce, plant some arugula. It's mostly leafy crops at this time. We're getting a little bit late for any of the fruiting crops, mm-hmm. But you can do radishes. You could get another possibly crop of beets in. Baby bok choy, all sorts of good stuff.
Lots of stuff we can still do. All right, horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark, thanks as always.
You're welcome.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.